This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's Week. It's your club, and this is your show.
A lot of the dreaded March madness is out of the way for Manchester City now. That's Anfield done and dusted, and while it might have been better at full-time, it might also have been worse. So all in all, probably good to get out of there, keeping things tight at the top of the table. On today's Blue Moon podcast, we'll discuss the talking points from that game, and we'll try to work out genuinely who that point means more for. City seemed at sixes and sevens in the second half, but only conceded by gifting Liverpool a penalty, and they could have won it when they hit the post and the bar at the other end. But at the same time, Liverpool missed a couple of good chances when through on goal and might have had a second penalty right at the death on another day. Plenty to get stuck into, plus it's the return of the FA Cup this weekend. City host Newcastle for a place in the semi-finals, so we'll look ahead to that one a bit later on in the show too. I'm David Mooney. With me for this one, I've got the Manchester Evening News chief City writer Simon Bykowski.
Hello.
And City fan Gaz.
Hi.
You alright?
Not too bad, thanks Gaz. Not too bad. Simon, are you well?
Yes, very well. Yeah, even better after you introduced me so well with a bit of a la-la-la-la.
What was that? A la-la-la-la?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was just you messing your words up, but I like to get that in early. Pressurise you with an early mistake.
You see, what I'm going to do is edit that out, so nobody's going to hear that.
I know, but now they do. That's the beauty of it.
All they know now is that I've messed it up and edited the intro, and they're not going to hear what I did. So
what else have you edited?
Well, yeah? Exactly.
Any photos Photoshop?
No, not yet. Not yet. I do dabble in it, but not to any great extent, as we all do. I don't know if you've seen this week, but Noel Gallagher's having a bit of an input on a City kit for next season. So no judgments on this. But if you could cement three previous City kits as home and away and third for the rest of time, what would it be?
I think last year's home kit, it's going to be iconic for everything we did in it, but I think it's like the best sort of twist on the traditional, you know, City kit. A lot of people like that Umbro one, don't they, in 2010, is it?
Or yeah.
2011, it's a bit derivative for me. So I think last year's home one. Away, the greatest ever kit ever produced is the Kappa away one from, like, 98, isn't it? The white one with the some navy shoulders and the maroon chest band. That's definitely the away kit. And third, the third one from that season I've just referred to, actually, you know, the white one with the red and black sash and the small sponsor, because sponsors ruin all club shirts. I'd probably go for that one.
Yeah. Fair play, Simon. Any input from you? Any that you've been covering City on where you thought that's actually quite a nice kit, that one?
It wasn't a home one, but it was a sort of blue one. The one that they wore for the Community Shield against Liverpool a few years ago that was sort of very, very retro.
Yeah.
I liked the Hacienda inspired away kit.
That was 2019, wasn't it? The year.
Yeah. That was the black one with sort of like the red, yellow and blue craziness down the sides. And then I also, for the third kit, I liked the one that was didn't have a club badge because it was just so bad. It kind of felt iconic in a different way.
See, that one, no. it said Man City across it. No.
Yeah. And sort of so uniquely inspired that sort of every Puma team had the same kit and they were all terrible.
No. I'm surprised none of you mentioned Ghost Green, but here we are.
I think Dortmund had that no badge one, and a player scored and went to kiss the badge and then
couldn't find it.
It wasn't there. Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent.
It did have a badge on that kit. It was just sort of like what would you call it? Embossed within it.
Yeah. Like 500 badges on the shirt, weren't
there?
Yeah.
It was
like,
bad.
It's like a quilt cover, that though. You don't want that. Yeah, I'm going to go with Gazan on the. I mean, I do like that Liverpool Community Shield home shirt, Simon, but I'm going to go with Gaz on last season's home kit was good. Last one I bought was the 2010 one you referenced, Gaz, the blue home shirt that everyone likes. That's the last one that I bought that I really liked. So
I bought one for the first time in about 10 years this year. I got the away, the white one with the sort of amber lettering. Largely because it was going cheap But I quite like that one. Good.
Excellent, excellent. Right, well, as always, this episode of the Blue Moon Podcast is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. The season is entering the business end now, and Green King Sport venues are showing every single televised City fixture over the 23-24 season. And with more than 900 sports pubs across the UK, it doesn't matter where you're based, you can catch every single minute of the action. Football is best enjoyed with your mates, so if you're not going to the ground this month, get a text in the group chat and head to your local Green King Sports venue to catch the game. That includes this weekend's FA Cup tie with Newcastle. We'll be previewing that one later on in the show too. Don't forget to download the Green King Sports app to enjoy exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there is a match on. Before we get to Newcastle, though, let's talk about Liverpool, because Simon, this felt like a bit of a difficult game to assess, because as I said in the intro, it's like there was so much going on, and you could argue that it was a good point to get out of there. Equally, you can argue City should have won, and you can also argue that they were probably lucky not to lose.
Yes, I thought it was a good point. That was my takeaway from the game. You have to have so much go right at Anfield to get a result, and City have had so much not go right at Anfield over the years that they barely do get a result. So, I mean, the first half was almost perfect. The second half was very, very, very tough. But to emerge with a point after that second half, I think is good. And I think, you know, I don't think there are any more difficult any games left that are more difficult than Liverpool away for City. I know they've got Spurs away and Arsenal at home, but I think Liverpool away was the one. So, you know, if you want to be bullish about it, you try and get 10 wins from your last 10. And if Liverpool get 10 wins from the last 10 and that stops City winning the league, then I think you just kind of have to congratulate them. But I, you know, I... No, true. But yeah, I thought it was a good performance and a good point.
Yeah, it felt brave at times, Gaz. And I mean, like, they were really under the cosh at times, but they just kind of carried on playing through it.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky, isn't it? I mean, we definitely have good chances to win it, like you say. I mean, I don't think the one from Foden would have counted had it, you know, been a few inches lower.
Imagine if that goal was the one that kind of won the game and the title.
There probably is a world, isn't there, where, like, a technicality, you know, because it wasn't intentional, it was allowed. But didn't they change the rules so, like, you can't actually score a goal with your hands?
It wouldn't be like anybody from Liverpool to complain about a ball hitting a city player's arm in the penalty area.
Oh, my God. It would just be... what was I talking about? But, I think it was a good point on the day because of balance, you know. It was 19 shots to 10, wasn't it? So, I mean, even though we were better in the first half, we go over the entire game, you know, they probably deserved it more than us. But in a sort of wider sense, like, I really thought it was important to win yesterday on Sunday, because we've always gone ahead, haven't we, and just made the opposition win out of games. They don't like needing snookers, as it were. I'd rather have the points on the board and the tougher running, really, because this is slightly unfamiliar territory for us.
Yeah, you've just reminded me of a good old... I was playing snooker with friends at university, and I was desperately chasing, trying to get back into the frame, needing snookers. And I remember saying, as long as the green stays up, I'm carrying on. And then I played the green safe, and it went off about four cushions and into the middle pocket. And I was just like, right, okay, that's it, yeah. So I just imagine City now winning all 10 games, but Liverpool doing the same. Let's kind of dig into the first half then, Simon, because it was a good performance in the first half. We'll start with a goal. There's the feeling that set pieces for City are not really their thing. So this was really nice to see.
Yeah. I mean, set pieces really weren't City's thing. And then a few years ago, with Carlos Vicens coming into the coaching setup, they really became their thing. And I think it was around COVID and, you know, marginal gains and all that, and City really turned it into a strength, and they've kind of slackened off a bit, but in January when they went away to Abu Dhabi, they really worked on set pieces, and they've had a lot of good results from that. I think they scored from a corner at Tottenham in the FA Cup, and then there was kind of a quick free kick with De Bruyne and Alvarez. So they have been working hard at it, and it kind of feels like the goal that Arsenal have got a lot of credit for all season, with like their kind of defenders blocking off players inside the box to create paths for their players to score from. So it was a very tidy goal, and I mean, Klopp said after the game that like they'd never seen that before from City. So after 8 years of preparing to face a Pep team, you think you've got everything planned, and then they pull a Trent Alexander-Arnold corner routine on you and go 1-0 up. So yeah, it was very, very nice goal, and nice that they're still surprising Klopp after all this time.
Yeah, I was going to say Allardyce corner routine, but that's literally just pump it into the box and get all your big men on it, isn't it? It's not, there's nothing kind of too delicate about that one. Gaz, when you see kind of like when you see it go in from Stones, I mean, I didn't know it had gone in at first. I thought it had gone wide, and then everyone was running off celebrating. I was kind of like, has that gone in? I can't really tell. But when you see that kind of routine, it's nice seeing a routine like that where the opposition are complaining about everything but have nothing to complain about.
Did they complain? I think I thought was most telling about sort of Neville's insistence that it could have been a foul was the fact that McAllister didn't react at all to the fact that he'd been supposedly shoved out of the way. So, it was good to see. That fella got some attention. What's he called? Vicenz, is it?
Yeah.
Was it against Brentford recently? We sort of did that free kick round the corner, which Pep sort of gave him the sort of nod.
No, against Brentford, you're thinking of the free kick that Bernardo passed straight out of play into touch. I think the quick one was Burnley, but yeah.
Burnley.
Not one of Vicenza's better ones.
No. that was one they were working on in the team bar. Yeah.
It went to his head. Good to sort of, I mean, it's obviously well worth. I was worried when we did that one against Brentford. I remember speaking to Chris Higginbottom, who does this podcast, it's Sam next to him, and we watched it going in front of us, and I was worried that have we burnt that, have we like in the war when you have the Enigma code and they couldn't they couldn't let the Germans know we had it, and so and I remember sort of thinking, like, against Brentford, you don't want to be using that. So, but we did have a better one up our sleeve, didn't we, against Sunday, used it to great effect. Yeah, that's my take.
Yeah, I'm just wondering when they're going to roll out the one where Bernardo chips it into touch again, just to really get at the other two. I thought it was interesting, Simon, that in the first half, City were a lot more direct than I was expecting them to be. I was expecting them. Guardiola's talked so much recently about when the crowd are up, you've got to kill them with passes, sort of thing. And then they get to Anfield, and I was thinking, right, as soon as they get the ball, this ball's going nowhere. It's just going to go around City's team in their own half for a bit. And they just kept looking for Haaland and Alvarez on the run all the time. I thought that was quite... I thought it was an interesting approach, and maybe one that Liverpool weren't expecting.
Yeah, I think so. And, a bit earlier when I was talking about what a good point it was, and Gaz kind of made the point that, felt like they wanted that win. Like, when you looked at the teams, you thought, they've never had really a better chance to beat Liverpool here in recent memory. And, it was a team picked with kind of Foden on the right and Alvarez on the left and De Bruyne pushing forward to kind of really attack Joe Gomez at left back and Conor Bradley at right back to really see if City could kind of use their speed beyond the lines, which we don't often see them doing, like you say. And it did work. It was just sort of... Alvarez kind of had that unfortunate knack of giving the ball away every time it hit his foot.
Or skying his shots from the edge of the box, yeah.
Yeah, and De Bruyne wasn't great, and Bernardo wasn't great, and even Foden was a bit off it. So it was good as a tactic in the first half, but I think maybe it became a bit unsustainable in the second half when they kind of needed to put the foot on the ball to sort of escape the chaos that was engulfing them.
Yeah. Well, you're getting the sense, Gaz, certainly as the half was wearing on, that it was one of them where if we don't get a second here, we could pay for this.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like, I mean, I don't know if it's just sort of my jaundiced view, but it often feels as if we do this, don't we? We start games very well and don't really
you know, capitalise as well as we should do. I mean, we probably were good for a couple of goals in that spell at the start. I mean, Liverpool could probably say the same about their sort of spell of dominance. I thought, like, do what I was interested about this. That sounds a bit sort of bitter, but, like, Joe Gomez got a lot of credit, didn't he, coming out of that game? My memory is in the first half that Foden had him absolutely all ends up, didn't he, down that side. Alvarez on the other side is like a different story, really, and that's what sort of made us all lose all the momentum, I think. But, yeah, first half performance was really strong, and we probably we should have got more than one goal, shouldn't we? Given what
Well, I guess the halftime team talk, I'm guessing, was probably not leave a back pass short and have Edison hoof Darwin Nunez in the air. It's unexpected, I guess, from Ake. He's been good all season. And there's, I guess, Gats, there's not really much more to say than that. You know, like a trusted player has made a bit of a ruck, and Edison maybe could pull out of the challenge. I don't know.
I blame Edison for that more than Ake. I mean, obviously, like, Ake's put him in that position, but he's just, it was so rash. There's just no need. It wasn't like the Garnacho one the week before where, you know, he had to win it. He would have had a very tight angle to goal if he would have just stood him up, and it was just a complete not a brain fart. He didn't have to go for it. And, you know, I mean, I absolutely love Edison. It sounds like a bit of a knee jerk, but I really, you know, given what happened and how well Ortega did when he came in, I'm actually quite happy that he's got 4 weeks, you know, to because, I mean, in previous seasons, if Edison's out for 4 weeks, you would have thought, well, that's that now. But I think we've got a really good goalkeeper coming in who looks to be in form, who I don't think would have made that mistake.
The thing is, though, Simon, after that mistake, it kind of sets the tone then for the second half. And how did you think City coped with all of that in the second half, given, as I say, Liverpool might have had a couple of goals, but at the same time, City did stand up to it?
Yeah, see, what was really galling about the goal was that Liverpool kept on passing to Darwin Nunez, and Darwin Nunez was unable in the entirety of the first half to stay onside. It was like every time they get a good chance, it'd be like, Nunez, offside. So the only way he was going to get in on goal was if a City player passed to him. So it was rather unfortunate that Ake kind of set him off and sort of put him into Edison's path. I know Edison
stops him. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But not the assist that Ake wanted. And yeah, like you say, you watch the game and you think, yeah, City are really under the cosh. City are struggling. And, you know, when they had to take De Bruyne off, you were like, well, yeah, this is really obvious because they need someone in midfield who can actually keep hold of the football. And, you know, obviously Alvarez off as well. But like you say, when you think back on it, like, I can't really think about too many good chances from Liverpool. And they've dominated the half. But, you know, Doku's hit the inside of the post and had it bounce straight into the keeper's arms. And Foden's nearly kind of
punched one in.
thrown it into the net.
Diaz had three, didn't he, in the space of about 5 minutes, one of which he probably should have got on target.
Yeah, well, that's it. I think because Edison didn't make any saves.
He was off by then as well, wasn't he? So.
yeah, him as well. Ortega made a few decent saves. But it was not. It didn't feel like Liverpool really opened City up and had that big chance. So, you know, then the only goal they got was from a penalty. So you sort of have to say that City did quite well, despite how uncomfortable it will have been for people to watch them.
Yeah, I didn't find it particularly easy to watch, I'm not going to lie. Guys, let's talk about Kovacic for a bit, because Simon mentioned that swap. He, at a time when City really needed some control of the game back, he did come on and steady the ship. And I was interested that Guardiola chose not to start him, because I thought this would have been a game where they wanted that sort of body in there from the off.
Yeah, he's done a bit better recently. He's not been quite as good as we'd hoped after his first couple of games, had he? So that might have sort of played into his thinking. Everybody, you know, every after like 5 or 10 minutes of that second half, every City fan I know, you know, on WhatsApp was just saying the same thing. And that was, you know, Alvarez off, Kovacic on. It was like completely obvious that that was the change. It's like, it's not like I'm ragging on Alvarez a lot here, but like, I think he didn't play particularly well. And that, you know, that's where the control was being lost. He came on and he did help Matt. I think you got to give some credit to Doku as well, because he came on and I thought he did really well. You know, he's still not very good running back towards his own goal, but I thought like he looked after the ball quite well when he came on as well. So I think that at the same time as Kovacic coming on was, you know, the things improved after that point.
Yeah. What did you make of De Bruyne and Pep on the touchline, Gaz? Because I've seen two schools of thought on this one. The first one is that which I subscribe to, that actually De Bruyne does this a lot and like has his opinions and they both respect each other and it's good for them to kind of have these chats. But at the same time, like, don't do it in front of the Anfield crowd when you're under the cosh like that.
I have no idea why he went to talk to him. Like, there's nothing to be gained, was there, about having that discussion, like you say, there in full view of everyone. And he wouldn't do it with anyone else, I don't think. He just, you know, he does just ignore people, doesn't he, while there's a game on. It might say something about Pep, given that he I don't think he would have done it to anyone else in the sort of esteem which he holds De Bruyne in. But, yeah, I don't think there was anything to be gained from doing that while there was a match on. I don't think he would have done it for anyone else.
Yeah. Simon, do you think there's an element of De Bruyne needs to not do that again in front of the crowd? Because like immediately that happens, you get the ironic jeers and everything else kind of happens around that. And it just kind of adds to the whole feeling and the atmosphere in the place.
I mean, maybe, but, you know, City were a lot better after the subs and played a lot better and had kind of, you know, more of the balance of play after the sub. So I don't think it kind of negatively impacted them on the pitch. You know, you don't want your star player kind of just coating off the manager and all of his staff in full sight of any crowd, really. And nor do you want the manager sort of sat having a quiet word with him to make sure his ego's okay when he should be in the, you know, in the dugout watching the game. But it happened, and you know, you can see why it happened. And I don't think, you know, either will care that they've done it.
Yeah. And they got out there with the point, so like it's all forgotten after that. Let's talk about the very end then, because Gaz, you said credit to Doku. it's been decreed that what Doku did was controversial, and everything has been really, really kind of blown up about this. What did you make of that?
The penalties. I mean, yeah, obviously. All these things are true, aren't they? So Doku kicked the ball. He also kicked McAllister. McAllister got a chest on the ball. McAllister ran towards Doku. And whichever, you know, however, the weight you put on those four different things, you know, influence whether you think it should have been a penalty or not. I mean, consensus does seem to be that it was. I think it would have been a bit soft because... Oh, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to listen to love jaundice to you here, but like, you know, I don't think it doesn't feel like it was particularly dangerous play. I mean, I've seen sort of people say his feet were off the floor. Well, all his momentum was going upwards, wasn't it? It wasn't like he sort of, you know, smashed into him.
I've seen it compared to Mane on Edison.
Oh, no, it's shit. I mean, I've got a bit of a beam, my bonnet about this stuff anyway. I know this sounds like a bit sort of like Little England or whatever, but like this whole sort of notion of dangerous play now, it feels like it's got a bit out of hand. Like if you play football yourself, right, and look literally at no level, you know, don't you, when you're going in for something, there's a chance I could get something on me here. And it's not as if it's like you've been bullied out of it. It's just like, well, there's a coming together. And it feels like at any sort of... McAllister's reaction, right, at any level of football up to about championship level would just get laughed at. You're just writhing round on the floor because you know that VAR exists and you know it can go back and get looked at, etc. And it just doesn't really sort of feel as if it's the type of thing we would have been
sort of concerned with about 10, 15 years ago. Someone just going, oh, he's got foot to the ball, hasn't he? And he's caught him at the same time. It's like, I don't think it was like particularly dangerous. I think something else about, well, I'm on the soapbox, right? I mean, it might as well, it could, you know, I know if a Liverpool fan, if they were to listen to this, would be taking a completely different view. I don't understand their point of view. But like, this is why I think the penalty rule is just needs to be changed in terms of what penalties get given for, because they're so heavy, aren't they? You know, like you get like a situation like that where the ball's bouncing around on the edge of the box, right, and somebody, you know, just gets caught. Why should a game sort of, why are they sort of balanced on these decisions? Because it's not a goal-scoring opportunity, is it? You're like, I'd much prefer it if, like, you just gave fouls for them, like in the box or whatever, and that penalties were just there in case it's a goal-scoring opportunity. It would just cut out all this nonsense of people writhing around because they felt they'd been tapped, you know, while the ball's been bouncing around, etc. It just doesn't feel as if, like, game should be decided on that. Do you know what I mean? And it just feels like it's really, really common. Penalties get given even more so now in the VAR era for everything. And you think, well, it's not really redressed that much, really. All it's sort of done is given a, you know, the ball's bounced into that guy's hand, nowhere near the goal or whatever, and then that's the game, man.
Yeah.
It just sort of feels, it's just a bit of a bugbear of mine, really, now that we're given more and more penalties. It's like, it just sort of feels like it's not, it's just, you know, just affecting things more than they should, these kind of decisions. And I know if a Liverpool fan, I'd be doing a head in listening to that now, saying, well, that wasn't the rules on Sunday, which fine, I completely accept. But like, it does sort of feel as if like we're getting penalties left, right, and centre all the time, really, and they don't really sort of reflect, you know, they're not redressing anything, are they? Someone's just been caught mildly, you know, while the ball's been going away from goal or whatever.
Yeah, I will say, Simon, there is a world in which I think it's a penalty, and that's where that happens in the other the box at the other end.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, look, I need to qualify everything just said. Like, the neutral view seems to be more or less about unbalanced. It was a penalty, doesn't it? So we'll have to sort of give some regard to that.
Well, yeah, I'm with you, Gaz. Like, I thought it was clumsy. I thought I could absolutely see it being a penalty. I can see why Liverpool would be absolutely furious it wasn't a penalty. But when I looked at it, if McAllister had been bearing through on goal and Doku had karate kicked him in the chest to stop him rolling the ball into an empty net, that would feel like a denying a goal scoring opportunity, but like
that would also feel reflective of some of the things I've seen said this week.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, the idea, like, it wasn't the still image is really damaging because the still image is like a split second. And this stuff about, oh, it'd be a foul anywhere else on the pitch, and it's like, yeah, but think you do have to have a bit more sort of wait for it to be a penalty, surely.
Yeah, I'm all right with there being a higher bar for a foul in the penalty area, even if it's not like written down in the laws of the game. I'm all right with it on like an agreement between referees and players, just because, like Gaz says, you're getting a free shot at goal for it.
Yeah, yeah. And this, well, McAllister touched the ball first, and like, well, yeah, he did. He knocked it onto Doku's foot, and it then like spun into the air to nobody. So, like, it's not like Liverpool, it's not like McAllister would have sort of smashed the ball in had Doku not absolutely killed him. He'd have killed him if the ball wasn't there.
I don't, that's another argument I don't get. If the ball wasn't there, well, if the ball wasn't there, Doku wouldn't be doing that. So
I also kind of struggle because I was obviously sat in the press conference and Jurgen Klopp was very, very reasonable. About as reasonable as somebody can be when they're really going on about something while maintaining it doesn't bother them. but he said nobody in this room would have thought it was a scandal if VAR intervened, and you're like, no, true. And then you get out of the press conference and look at Sky, and he said, oh, he would have killed him. It's like, and you're like, right, well, you've been on quite some journey in the last 10 minutes.
So it
felt like, yeah, there have been many different and wild takes on it. But I just, call me, add me to the sports washing brigade, but I didn't really think it was a penalty.
When you manage Liverpool, you do know. So when you manage Liverpool, you do know that you have, you know,
on hand some of the world's most psychotic people who you can, you know, with a few choices.
But enough about the media.
Rile them up, can't you, into it being a talking point all week. So, I mean, like, again, like, you know, I know a Liverpool fan would think listening to me talk about it, it's like, you know the one in the reverse fixture where Akanji, you know, yeah, just went up for a header after Alisson pushed him away and then Diaz put it in? How much, right, that people stopped talking about that within hours. If yeah, that was the other way, how do you think? You would still be hearing people talk about it. It's just the way it is. And, you know, Klopp's not daft. He knows that he can keep these things, you know, high in the agenda just by sort of, you know, exercising certain people. I don't even know if it would be a penalty. If people say that, don't they? It would be a penalty anywhere, a foul anywhere else on the pitch. If it was anywhere else on the pitch, McAllister probably would have just cracked on with it. He wouldn't have been riding around for 2 minutes in the centre circle, would he?
Yeah.
You know, everyone would have just moved on. But we're guilty of it ourselves. Right? All anyone ever wants to talk about is referees.
Yeah, well, we've just done 10 minutes on it, so yeah. let's move on.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Simon, it leaves the table now with Arsenal and Liverpool on 64 points, City on 63 points. I think it's good that City in the end kept everything tight, and it's like that there's not a lot between the teams there, especially when you consider what it could have been had that penalty been given at the end, for instance. But at the same time, City haven't yet beaten a side this season above sixth.
Yeah,
Oh my god!
Yeah, and worse than that, the side in sixth is United. So,
yeah,
I said before the Liverpool game that the Arsenal game would be more important, because if they can beat Arsenal at home, then it kind of, you know, sends a message that they're knocking about and they're there again. But, you know, like Klopp said afterwards, like, oh, City's City. You're like, well, is it, if you've watched them this season? Like, because they're still not. It's mental because they've won 18 of the last 21 games and drawn the other three. So they are a team who is in a lot of form. But at the same time, they're just not quite being as convincing as certainly Arsenal. So if they can beat Arsenal at home, then I think we will all get on board the City are going the distance. But if they can't, I think that would suck a lot of momentum out, because especially how they've sort of monstered Arsenal so often at the Etihad. I think they kind of really need a big statement win against Arsenal to sort of, I don't know, convince the rest of us on top of everyone else who's just sort of assuming that they're going to sleepwalk to the title.
Yeah. Gaz, are you getting the sense that City are not as good in the big games this season as well?
We haven't been, have we? I mean, that's just the long and the short of it. I mean, we were good for half the game on Sunday. The performance at Arsenal was really bad. Who else have we played? Spurs. We were okay, weren't we, that home game against Spurs? They did well as well, but, you know, there were circumstances there.
Spurs, Liverpool at home should have won them both.
Yeah, and then there's the Villa game, where that is literally the best I've seen any team play against us since that time Messi turned up. I've never seen anything like that Villa game. That was just unbelievable. So, yeah, no, I think it's a fair criticism. Yeah, we should have done more in those games, definitely.
Yeah. Well, let's talk more about controversy then, because ahead of the game at Anfield, tensions were somewhat needlessly stoked when Liverpool defender Trent Alexander-Arnold said in an interview with 442 that their trophies mean more to them because of the financial situation at both clubs. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, but first, let's have a look at what was said in the build-up to the match.
¶¶
Friday's pre-match press conference, Trent Alexander-Arnold's comments were put to Pep Guardiola.
I don't know if you're aware, Trent Alexander-Arnold has said that, in his opinion, winning trophies means more to Liverpool than it does to Manchester City. I don't know what you feel about that, but there's also an implication that it doesn't matter to City, it doesn't mean as much because you spend lots of money. I'm just wondering what your observations about that whole situation is.
I wish him a speedy recovery and come back to the pitch as soon as possible.
Pep, do you get tired by this kind of accusation that it's still about money here? I mean, I know you talk about you couldn't have won without the money, but I mean, this kind of attitude from Trent and the comments that have been made this week.
Speedy recovery for him and he can black soon as possible.
Guardiola wasn't biting, but when the Liverpool boss Jurgen Klopp was asked about the interview, he defended what Alexander-Arnold had said.
He's born in Liverpool. He stood on the bins before he played for the club. He played through all youth teams. What would you think in that situation? One of our slogans, what I love, is this means more. And it means more to us. We have no clue exactly what 100% what it means to other people, but what happens here means more to us. The club is special to us. If it's not special to other people, yeah, we cannot change that. But that when we feel it like that, why shouldn't we be allowed to say it?
Now, nobody's really arguing that players or fans can't enjoy their own successes, but that isn't quite what Alexander-Arnold said. He said that Liverpool's trophies will mean more to them and their fan base because of the situations at both clubs financially, and because of how both clubs have built their teams. There's an insinuation there that Klopp ignored.
I'm pretty sure he holds respect as well. In the last decade, Man City is the most successful football club in England, definitely, and maybe in Europe. And they could have won the Champions League more often. For some reason, they didn't. But in England, it's ridiculous the record they have. Ridiculous. It means a lot to them, to their people, I'm sure. But for us, maybe it's just for the fact that we didn't win that many. We are not in the situation winning five league titles in a row and then realizing number six, number five was better. We never had that situation, so we don't know 100%. That's clear.
Klopp and Guardiola weren't the only people asked about those comments. What Alexander-Arnold said was put to Erling Haaland by Sky Sports.
If he wants to say that, okay. I've been here 1 year and I won the treble and... It was quite a nice feeling. I don't think he knows exactly this feeling. So that's what I felt last season. It was quite nice. They can talk as much as they want, or he can talk as much as he wants. I don't know why he does that, but I don't mind.
Ruben Dias went into more detail to defend City's achievements when speaking to BBC Radio Manchester.
I consider myself lucky to have been in two clubs that have always won things for themselves, for their fans, for their players, for their families. And that makes me proud. And then, obviously, we've won a lot in this club, and especially last year with the treble. I think it's pretty certain between us, between our fans, how much it meant for all of us. And at the end of the day, you can only have certain emotions if you actually win stuff. So a treble is a feeling that you can only know how it feels when you actually do it.
And Dias celebrated the treble well, don't forget. He ended up being sick in Jack Grealish's mum's handbag after doing shots with the team. He certainly knows how much it meant to fans to see the team win what they did last season. And he explains he prefers to focus on City rather than what other people think.
I think that in a club like Man City, our greatness will be shown in the way that these comments don't affect us, because we know what we've done, we know what we've conquered, we know what we're going for in what's to come. And we don't do it for anyone else, we do it for ourselves. Other people's success is deserved for their own achievements. What we focus is on ourselves, and I think that's the way to move forward, and that's the way to be big, to be a big club. Try and comment on other people's success or in success and try and make it bigger or smaller, depending on how convenient it is for you.
So some of City's players responded to Alexander-Arnold's comments, and Guardiola was asked about how Haaland and Dias spoke this week.
They defend the club, not just pointing this guy, you know, what they have done many years on the pitch, every single 3 days. That is the best way, so they would have done it. I could answer him, but why? So, honestly. So it's what it is. It's very incredible, proud to what we have done, and the way is not needs that to prove me my players what really, really feels, what really
are united to try to do it.
The city manager carried on, telling reporters that there will always be external scrutiny.
We have a public job, and the people, the job cannot be done without the opinion for the external people. So it's normal, and the good ones and the bad ones. So it's not a problem. So we have to live with that. We have to deal with that. Otherwise, you cannot be in that world. But at the end, inside of the ropes, so we know who we are, what we have to do to continue to be there.
You get the sense that Guardiola, certainly in recent years, feels that the amount of hard work he and his players put in to win titles is underappreciated. City have often made winning look easy, but just because it looks easy doesn't mean it has been easy. People often point to the money they've spent as if that's the only magic bullet to success. And while City's resources are greater than Liverpool's, let's not pretend that the Merseysiders haven't also spent more than most of the Premier League too.
Every club has his own targets to being criticised from outside. Barcelona's completely different than here. Just what I said before. So we are in a world that the people have an opinion. So what the right back from Liverpool has said is what a lot of people think. So it's not news, I would say. That's why it's not necessary to say much.
Ultimately, with this sort of stuff, it's the fans who bear the brunt of it all. We're the ones who feel the anxiety with every game and the tension with every trophy on the line. We're the ones who have been with the club from the depths of Division 2 to the heights of the current era. How would Alexander-Arnold even begin to know what City's successes have felt like for the supporters?
Hi guys, this is Gary Owen and you're listening to the Blue Moon podcast.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
So then, Alexander-Arnold's comments. Gaz, this, I don't know about you, but it feels quite tiresome at this stage that this is still where we're at with it all. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's just a very tawdry conversation. And it's one of those perfect sort of football conversations, isn't it? Because it's like, it's completely unknowable. There's no way you can prove one thing one way or another. So, of course, people will just want to talk about it. You know, for all we know, it might be Plymouth Argyle fans that derive the most pleasure from their team doing well. We don't know, do we? we only have our own lived experiences. I think my sort of take on this is that, like, I mean, look, I preface this by saying, like, I've lived in Liverpool. I love Liverpool as a city. I've got loads of, you know, mates who are very, very sound Liverpool Football Club fans. I've got a lot of regard for them. But where all this sort of seems to come from, well, the people who sort of get most exercised by it, and we've spoken about this, haven't we, separately, is that, like, is the sort of quarters it comes from. So, like, I mean, aside from Alexander-Arnold, like, the Liverpool fans that seem to be most sort of forthright in all this are, you know, let's be honest, like people who basically just experience football via social media and talk sport or whatever, you know. And I do sort of feel a bit like, you know, I've been going to the match for the best part of 4 decades. Like that experience that you have as being some sort of, like, you know, an online fan or whatever, I'm sorry, it just doesn't. You can't talk to me. I've seen City play at every single level. I've been going every week. I see my friends there. You know, I've got a family connection, etc. You, if you're just some, you know, gobshite online, you don't get it. I'm sorry. I'm like, you're probably more into a lot of stuff, but it's just not the same. And it's those people who will sort of propagate it. Whereas, like, genuine, what I would call a Liverpool fan with a similar experience of being a football fan to me, that I just don't think that they would sort of come out with this kind of stuff. It's just, it's funny really, isn't it? It's like, you know, the sort of subtext to it all is like, oh, you know, it's all plastic on our side. It's like, well, there's a lot of, you know, PR that goes into being a Liverpool fan, which certain people have sort of taken hook, line and sinker, but they sort of think that that's the genuine experience. It's entirely derived from this idea that, you know, the there's some sort of specialness to it. But it's not. It's, you know, I'm sure that being a City fan is no different to supporting, like, the Plymouth Argyle, Crewe Alexandra, Doyle, Southport. It's your club. I'm here talking to you now on the podcast about it. These things mean a lot to us.
Yeah.
And it, you know, the idea that you're special. Nah, for the birds. To be honest, though, I mean, to be fair to Trent Alexander-Arnold, like, did he expect all this, or did he just answer a question and he was just trying to, you know, be platitudinal and, you know, in the way that footballers are when they talk, and then it's sort of grown legs, hasn't it? I mean, I'm sure if he would have considered his response, would he have said the same thing again? Don't know.
Don't know. Simon, can you understand why Guardiola didn't want to get involved on Friday?
Yes. I thought Pep was pretty spot on with his sort of like, well, I could reply, but what's the fucking point?
Yeah.
Like, why should I? Haaland had obviously had his message, and Diaz had gone in as well. But yeah, I mean, Guardiola never really likes getting involved in these kind of things, but like, he will get it. Like, you know, he comes from a football club that have like more than a club stitched into their heads. So, you know, Barcelona are the Liverpool of Spain, really. Sorry.
who are the city of Spain?
it's a mate of a mate. I know someone, right, who supports the city equivalent in every country. So like, it's like,
wow.
You know, like the city rival of the biggest club in that country. So it's like Atletico Madrid, you know, 1860 Munich, you know, whatever. He makes a point of like that being his team in that country. I mean, so yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but I mean, probably should have been Espanyol, but now Girona.
Wouldn't that be Atletico? Surely it's Atletico.
Yeah,
this sort of stuff. Well, that's what my mate reckons anyway.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, Real have been massive compared to Barca, aren't they? So yeah. But yeah, nobody wants to be Atletico.
We used to have the same shirt as Celta Vigo every year when we both had Umbro, but they just had different badges on. It's made it sound.
Yeah, that's the same way that I keep seeing that 90s City goalkeeper shirt pop up with Everton badges on, and it confuses me.
I had that with an Aberdeen badge on.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Are Aberdeen the city of Scotland?
I don't know.
It's hard to say Scotland, isn't it? Like, I mean, because... Yeah, anyway, what's that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, there is a segue here, because City could be the Rangers of England if the charges are proven, I guess, Simon. And like, all this does come back round to, well, City have been charged now. And like, even, but this thought process of things not meaning as much to City fans is like, it long predates the charges. Is this just what life is going to be like now, whether or not the charges are there?
Yeah, I think it's annoying because, you know, you can completely see why Alexander-Arnold thinks that, you know, because like Gaz was saying, it's just like so ingrained in Liverpool, and, you know, whether he should be saying it ahead of a game, maybe not, but then it's also probably been done ahead of time and to publish in time for the derby.
It was in 4-4-2, wasn't it?
So yeah, yeah.
6 weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly. But it just sort of, it ties into kind of so many tropes about City that other people would like to believe, and things like that. Because, you know, again, he didn't really sort of specify. He said, you know, it means more because of the financials. You know, he could be talking about Liverpool buying Virgil van Dijk or Alisson and, you know, spending like record amounts on a player. That might be why he thinks it means more, but we just all assume that he's talking about certain other things.
Yeah.
I think we've seen it this week on the overlap as well, haven't we? With Carragher talking more nonsense than the big sort of fan debates. Like,
he's had a great week.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, every time you think there's no coming back, and then it turns out there is.
There again, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is just life where somebody somewhere will say, it's a bit like in Family Guy when Lois is going up for election against Peter and just keeps saying 9/11 as the answer to everything, and the crowd goes wild. It's sort of, you just mentioned 115. You know, everyone went mad for Ian Wright doing it on Monday Night Football, and he was like, yeah, I'd like these charges sorted so we can all appreciate how amazing City are. But it was like, no, he's mentioned the charges.
I read that completely as being very sympathetic towards City, as opposed to the way.
Landed that way with me as well. I mean, the thing is, Gaz, I get asked this a lot when I'm doing interviews for ahead of games, like on various media outlets. But like, quite often you get asked, do you get bored with winning? And it just, what it says to me is, like, people don't understand what it's like to be not a City fan, but a football fan. Because, like, you can't tell me that City are playing, I don't know, Burnley or Brentford at home in a tight title race. And we don't go to the Etihad thinking, God, I just hope they get over the line today. The anxiety's there already still. And, like, the idea that City, yeah, sure, they'll turn up and 9 times out of 10, they'll win the game quite comfortably. We still feel that anxiety about the game. It's still, like, we still have the same feelings as every other football fan.
Probably get more nervous now than ever before. Like, since we've become quote unquote good, there's a different dynamic, isn't there, to going to City, whereby you never start the match with the result you need, whereas previously a draw would have been fine. Do you know what I mean? So you're like, the status quo was all right. So yeah, there is always that, you know, you need to win. And that's the most, you know, for all the stuff, people talk about Guardiola and, like, you know, how, you know, idiosyncratic his teams are, etc. But the one thing that makes him the best is just that winning mentality. Every week you win, it's just a results machine. It's just result, 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 result. And, you know, it's amazing because the result is so important every week. Like, yeah, we're pretty much always off, you know, playing a team which doesn't have the resources, which we do. But you have to repeat the trick every single week.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about repeating the trick for this week then, because it's Newcastle in the FA Cup. And, Gaz, I saw a lot of Newcastle fans upset at this draw. I wondered just how much City would have wanted to face Newcastle this weekend as well, given that they've just played Liverpool United, they've got Arsenal to come, that sort of thing. It feels like they could have had a better draw, even as out of form as Newcastle have been.
It feels like they lose every week. Whenever I see their result, they've lost. And that they're still in the top half. The only time... You know, the only game I think they've won this season is when Knotts is out the Carabao. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, they were also good, weren't they, in that game in New Year? That was like, you know, both teams played well there. But apart from that, I mean, I don't watch Newcastle that much, but like, it feels like Luton get points every week and in the bottom three. And Newcastle lose every week, but are still in the top half. There's something going on there.
Yeah, what are they not telling us?
Exactly.
Yeah, Simon, for City, with an otherwise fit squad, with an international break to come, no midweek game, I'm wondering if we might see a stronger side than some would expect here, because, you know, key players always need the run-ins on its way. The key players need the rhythm, and it's a little bit less about opportunities at this stage of the cup run. The only one I wonder we've got a question mark over now is De Bruyne, given that he pulled out of the Belgium squad.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think De Bruyne will play, which is interesting because, yeah, who comes in? Do you have Foden in the middle with Kovacic, who did so well against Liverpool? Does Alvarez come in to try that again, or Bernardo Silva or Oscar Bob? Or there are quite a few options, but I think it will be a strong team because, you know, I don't want to sound too negative, but it might be the only trophy City win this season. Yeah. So, you know, they've got to treat it like that and then just kind of hope they don't draw Liverpool in the next round and have another round of Klopp versus Guardiola, the last dance again.
Yeah, save that for the final, mate. That'll get everybody going. Is Rodri going to get some time off, do you reckon, Gaz?
I don't know. He played like 60-odd, didn't he, last season? I mean, he has had a bit of a break this year through... suspension, hasn't he? I don't know. I think he'll go strong. I mean, I'd be. I saw
you know, people saying, oh, Bob might get a game. I don't know, you know. I think yeah. We got an international break after that, so yeah, I think he'll go strong.
I mean, we mentioned Edison a bit earlier on, Gaz. It seems like he could be out for a little while. Ortega was probably going to play this one anyway, but it now feels like there is an opportunity for him to impress for a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, like I said before, I'm quite happy. He's got, you know, it seems like 4 weeks. He's I don't even really think on the distribution side of it you can tell much of a difference now. They seem to call each other a bit up, haven't they? Like, his distribution has got better, but I'd say that Edison's sort of like fundamental goalkeeping's improved this year as well. So yeah, looking forward to being in the team. Like any other year with any other backup, I'd be really sort of fretful at the moment, but no, looking forward to him playing.
Yeah, Simon, is that first choice slot open to him, do you think, for the remainder of the season? If he comes in, does well for 4 weeks, is there a chance that Guardiola might keep him in there?
Yeah, I think so. Like, City really rate him, and you know, there's been a contract offer on the table for a while, because they would really like him to stay, but they also kind of know that he's almost too good a number two, and he wants to be a number one. And if he doesn't get the chance soon at City, then he won't. But you know, Guardiola's dropped enough big players that if Ortega performs as well as he can, then you know, Edison might be another.
Yeah. Let's quickly touch on the defence as well, Simon, because Diaz dropped for Akanji at the weekend. I think that was down to, basically, I think Akanji's better under pressure on the ball than Diaz is, so that's probably why he did that. But who does he go with this weekend? Guardiola's still learning the ropes. Stones obviously needs managing. Akanji, excellent at Anfield. Diaz maybe needs the minutes. Then you've got the Walker and Ake situation.
Yeah, I think it's probably four out of the five of the four that played at the weekend plus Diaz. You know, Diaz might come in, but maybe Akanji stays in over Walker. I think they're your five best defenders, really. I get that Guardiola needs to play and whatever, but I think you're just going to go as strong as you can for Saturday. So, you know, it would be significant if Diaz didn't come back in, because he's not really been rested in that way this season. But at the same time, yeah, I thought Akanji played really well again on Sunday. And Ake,
he's been so good this season, Akanji. Like,
yeah, he's just not John Stones. That's his problem.
No, I feel like people are watching a different player since I sorry to cross you, but like, I genuinely think he's been brilliant.
Yeah, no, but I mean, he's had a lot of stick in games where he's tried to do the Stones role and it's not quite come off. But even in those games, like against Chelsea, I think he's had like a half where he struggled in midfield and then he's gone back into defence and been immense. So it's he's been really good as a defender.
Get a dollop of City nostalgia every Monday. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Well, we'll get some predictions on the board shortly, but first let's get some thoughts from a Newcastle perspective. I've been speaking to Taylor Payne from Pod on the Tyne to get a grip of how they're feeling ahead of this game.
It's sort of the one step forward, two steps back thing. So 1 week it'll be good, and then the next week it'll be terrible, and then the week after that it'll be all right, and then the week after that it'll be absolutely garbage. And then, you know, you'll have a couple of games where you think, oh, things are turning around, we've started to play well, we'll look like our old selves again. And then the next week it'll be completely unrecognisable and everything will be terrible again. And I just think there's a massive lack of consistency there, you know. We don't seem to have that identity that we had last year of being that sort of front foot, intense sort of shithousing team that we were that got in the Champions League. So I'm not really sure what's going on, to be honest, David. Your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah, I mean, literally everybody that we speak to on the podcast for this season has been talking about injuries at some stage or the other. Feels like Newcastle are in a bit of an injury crisis at the moment. All season it feels like Newcastle have been in a bit of an injury crisis. Who's going to be around this weekend? Do you know?
Well, the news this afternoon is that Anthony Gordon's knee injury isn't as bad as first feared. I don't know if you saw what happened on Monday night against Chelsea, when he kind of signalled to the bench that he was feeling a bit of pain in his knee, and then he went down and had a seat and asked for the physio to come on. The physio then came on and flexed his knee, and he almost jumped out of the stadium in pain, which wasn't great. But apparently, early reports were that he could be out for a while, but from what we've heard today, it seems like he might even be in contention for this weekend, which would be a massive bonus for us. Harvey Barnes is going to miss out, from what I've heard. He's struggling with a groin injury, I believe, and Callum Wilson's still a long way off. There's still a few who are on the sidelines, but we have got a few more back. So the bench isn't quite as disastrous as it was in the sort of November, December months when we would have two sub goalkeepers, five left backs, a lad from the under 21s and maybe one grown up, you know?
Yeah. And a ball boy somewhere along the way. Yeah.
Somewhere, yeah, yeah, exactly. Jason Tindall in a kit.
That yeah. Kind of I mean, obviously as well, we've played out quite an end-to-end game at St. James's a couple of months ago now. Has things changed since then? Because that was a game very much where, like, from a City point of view, it felt like we very much earned that win in the end. But I can understand from a Newcastle point of view why you would feel like we absolutely stole it right at the death. So, like, how's it been since then?
Well, since then, it's kind of, again, it's been up and down. And just when you think that things are turning around, you know, just when you think, oh, great, we've got Harvey Barnes back. Great, we've got, you know, Jacob Murphy's back. Brilliant, we've got Elliot Anderson back. Just when you think things are starting to change, you lose another one or two players and then you're kind of back to square one again. That performance that we put in against you. Now, my recollection of this is quite hazy because I was in Berlin for the weekend watching it on the telly and I had a few German beers. But I thought we played pretty well on that day and I thought we were unlucky not to take something from the game, you know. But when you can bring on Kevin De Bruyne, I mean, that's just not fair, is it, David? Come on. I mean, that's not fair.
I don't know if they'll do it this weekend because early reports are he's pulled out of the Belgium squad with injury. So maybe not one we can do this weekend. But I mean, you look at the head-to-heads between City and Newcastle this season. Obviously, he knocked us out of the Carabao Cup earlier in the year. There was a really, really tight game at the Etihad where it felt like Guardiola didn't want to make any changes whatsoever. And by the end of it, City felt like they were running on fumes. It feels like Newcastle have been kind of close to being there, but then you look at other games and it looks like you've really struggled. So is this again, that inconsistency thing?
Absolutely. 100%. I think the part of the issue is the way we played last season is how Eddie Howe wants to play. That's how he wants his teams to play. That he wants them pressing. He wants them on the front foot. He wants intensity through the game. But you can only do that if you've got enough quality coming off the bench later on. And when we can't swap out the wide players and we can't swap out the front man and bring on somebody decent in the sort of 65th, 70th minute of a game, you end up flogging those players and they end up just running themselves into the ground. And I think this is what's happened with Alexander Isak and what's happened with Miggy Almiron and what's happened with Anthony Gordon to a certain extent as well, that if you were able to swap and change these players out and have a bit of a rotation, you would be all right. But when you don't have anybody who can come on off the bench, the schedule and the intensity of some of these games has just caught up with us, you know? And it's such a shame because I think that squad is capable of so much more, you know? In my opinion, if we had everybody fit for the full season, I know it's easy to say this because not every team has everybody fit and it's the same for everyone. Everyone has injuries. But I think if we had a decent squad that was fit for the full season, we would be up there challenging towards the sort of sixth, fifth, fourth sort of area. You know, we are capable of playing good football. We've shown it on numerous occasions this season. We just haven't been able to put the best 11 out on the pitch and often enough. And that's what stopped us, I think.
Yeah, when it came to the FA Cup draw as well,
I saw it coming a mile off, dude. I seen it. Well, I said, as soon as we got through, it was, well, it's going to be Man City away, isn't it? It's going to have to be.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the rest of the draw, and I mean, I'm going to be honest, there's a lot of teams in there that I think City would have rather had than Newcastle as well. I don't think there's, the feeling isn't,
I would echo that sentiment massively. Yes,
yeah, there's the feeling's maybe not equally mutual, but I think City looked at it and went, you know, if we can get a home tie, as long as it's not one of the teams, as long as it's not someone like Liverpool or United or Newcastle, then we'll be all right. Lo and behold, Newcastle comes out. So it's like what was the feeling around the draw? What's the aims for the rest of the season now, given what the draw has been and kind of like what the league position is?
Well, this is, you know, again, you come to this point in the season where you've got one chance left of silverware, and this is it, isn't it? You know, and then I think I think everybody who is a Newcastle United fan now after the draw thought, well, there you go. That's the end of that, basically. We're not going to get through against that team, which are, you know, one of the best teams in the world at the minute. But hey, mate, it's the FA Cup, isn't it? And you just don't know. You just don't know what's going to happen. You don't know which Newcastle's going to turn up. You don't know which City's going to turn up. It could go either way. But genuinely, I'm not holding out too much hope. I know you contacted me for the old charity bet before this, and I think City will just roll over us, to be honest. But it's one of those. You never know. You honestly never know. And I've said this so many times, where you try and make a prediction with Newcastle United, you come up against Bournemouth or Brentford or something like that, and you think, right, here we go. Nottingham Forest, Boxing Day, prime example. Come on then. Forest are struggling. We are playing better. Let's have it. We're at home. Everybody will be happy, and it'll be, you know, we've got a good team to put out. And then you get beat 3-0 and you think, well, what's going on? You know, like, what is it? You can't predict this team. It's impossible.
Has there been any difference between playing at St James's and playing away? Has it been anything like that?
The away form was tragic in the first half of the year. I think we only had one away win before New Year, which I think was the Sheffield United game, when we absolutely pumped them. I think it was the 8-0 or 8-1. Apart from that, the home form had been decent, but not spectacular. And I think there was a few games that had got away from us. You know, we were 1-0 up against Liverpool. We ended up losing 2-1 in the 93rd minute or something like that. We drew games against Bournemouth when, for all intents and purposes, we should have won that game quite comfortably. We had the chances. We didn't put the ball in the net. And I think, you know, I don't want to cry about it, and I don't want to be like, blaming anything else, but the Champions League and the European football, when you have a paper-thin squad, is really not what you need for the Premier League form, because you're juggling it constantly. And I'm sure City have been through this over the years as well, where you're trying to juggle and you're trying to put your best team out against the opponents that you come up with in Europe. But you just can't, you know. So this is why you end up having people like Matt Ritchie coming off the bench, who hasn't played football for sort of 18 months or whatever, or Paul Dummett having to come on and stuff like that. It's been such a tricky season.
Mm-hmm. It's nobody's getting the violins out for City. I understand that, but it was why everything last season fell into place at the right time. In that it was always that FA Cup semi final weekend. They'd have a team in the Champions League, a big Premier League game that they have to win, and then you get to the FA Cup semi final, and then be facing Chelsea or Arsenal or Liverpool, yeah. And it became one game too many. So last season, when they drew Sheffield United in the semi final of the FA Cup, it was kind of like that's the moment where things actually fell into place for you.
Yeah.
So I do get it entirely. Well, Taylor, I mean, it's difficult to predict the game at the weekend for that basis. What do you think Eddie Howe will do? What style do you think he'll try and bring to City? You mentioned the kind of intensive pressing game before. We've seen a bit of a change from Newcastle this season, I'm guessing.
We have, and I mean, I don't know if you saw the Chelsea game on Monday night, but for the first 10 minutes, we looked like we were trying to replicate it with some really intense pressing high up the pitch, closing down, and for sort of 5-7 minutes, it looked like it was going to work. Chelsea kind of struggled a little bit to get out. They were shanking the ball into the stand, and they were giving the ball back to us, and we were winning the ball and creating chances. And then Chelsea score, and suddenly the game plan is out the window, and Newcastle have to change the way they play. Now, the week before, we played Wolves, and we employed a low block. We sat in, we hit them on the break, and it was devastating. And Anthony Gordon's pace, and Miguel Almiron's pace, and Jacob Murphy's pace, and Alexander Isak's movement, and his sort of running in the channels, that was what won the game for us. I don't think you can do that against City. I think you kind of have to hang on to a certain extent for as long as you can and stay in the halves of football for as long as you can. And then when you get the chance, you have to take it. And I think we kind of did that quite well against City at St James's Park. City had so much of the ball, and we sat off them. But then when we got our chances, we took them. Now, if we can do that this weekend, you never know. There's a chance there. But I don't know which way he's going to go with this, because he employs this high press and he employs the intensity against Chelsea and it completely fails. He plays a low block against Wolves and it really works. So I don't know which way he's going to go. I've got a feeling that he'll sit in a little bit. I think he knows that Man City are too dangerous and they play out far too well from the back. to be pressing them like that. And I think maybe he thought against the Chelsea team who were struggling with confidence a little bit, maybe we could get on their heels. Maybe we could, you know, scare them a little bit in the first 10 minutes and get a goal, but it didn't work. So I don't know. I think it'll probably be a little bit more softly approach against City, definitely.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the charity bet earlier on. What have you gone for it?
I shouldn't say this as a Newcastle fan, but I think we will be royally pumped 3-0, I think. That's what I said. But again, this is the thing. You just don't know, do you? You just don't know the FA Cup. It could be anything. But I think City will win it comfortably.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. But don't worry, it'll be over soon.
That was Taylor Payne from Pod on the Tyne, and it's predictions time. It might have been a bit stressful against Liverpool, but that 1-1 draw saw Dan Burke's prediction come in. That means we've now raised £1,040 for the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. They're collecting for Manchester Central Food Bank, and they'll be back outside the Etihad on Saturday. Go and see them with a donation if you can. They'll be under the bridge near Asda from about 3 o'clock. William Hill is giving us 3 correct score singles on City's games, and we have Newcastle to predict to try and add some more money to the kitty for them. Taylor's gone for a 3-0 City win. That's 15-2 and £75 if he's right. Gaz, what are you having for this one?
2-1 City.
2-1 City is 8-1 and £80. Simon?
3-1 City.
3-1 City is 9-1 and £90 if you are right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for more on how to gamble responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. We will squeeze in a very quick listener question now. Get in touch on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast. You can email through the website, bluemoonpodcast.com. That's what Reese has done. He says, I know De Bruyne and Guardiola's disagreement at Anfield was resolved amicably, and the two of them often butt heads about what they think is right. But it got me thinking that we don't seem to have many of those manager-player bust-ups. What's the best City one you can remember? Gaz, is any of them that stand out to you? Most of my thoughts come from the Mancini era, but I think that's just the manager.
Mancini versus the entire team for the second half of the QPR game was a good one. I was trying to think of other ones. Like, there's the obvious one, isn't there, Tevez? Do you know one I randomly remember? Do you remember when Joe Royle fell out with one shot for half a season?
Yeah, that was Coventry. That was Coventry in the FA Cup, I think. He took him off, and I think one shot shouted at him, and then he just didn't turn up again for the next few weeks.
Yeah, that's the other one I remember. But no, just Mancini being all of us during that second half was wonderful.
Yeah, the other Royal one I think of, Gaz, is George Weah, because George Weah gave an interview after he left that said that Royal told him to shut up and fuck off. And I thought, when of all the City managers that City, all the managers that City have had, I think Joe Royal's probably the one I can imagine doing that to George Weah.
Well, yeah, wonderful.
Yeah. So, Simon, any standout for you? We please
leave
tell
the
me.
World Player of the Year award at the door.
Yeah. Yeah, Simon, I can never remember when you started covering City, so I don't know if you had much of the Mancini era to report on. But
like, No, I didn't have much, and Pellegrini was not really the hothead.
No.
There have been a few with Pep, but they've just been sort of unfortunately private. You know, Cancelo comes to mind. But I will say, in a plug for Netflix, the rant that Pep goes on shouting at all of the players after they lost at Southampton last year is meant to be like an all-timer, like will just be played on loop. Apparently eight or 9 minutes of him just going spare at them all.
Yeah, shut up and drink wine sort of territory, are we in it?
Well, it blows wine out the water.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to that.
Just on it, my favourite footballing beef, and it is sort of City related, is like, do you remember there was a long running beef between Daniel Mills and Thierry Henry, just because of how lopsided it is.
Two greats of the game.
Yeah.
Is it over that penalty?
Yeah, well, they, for years they hated each other, didn't they? It was like, sort of proper sort of beef between them, but it's just very funny, just given the sort of comparative standing.
Excellent. I'd forgotten all about that penalty until you brought that up then. But yeah, that's it for this week's Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks also to my guests for this one, Simon Bakowski.
Thank you very much.
And Gaz.
Nice one.
There's a clip of this week's Patreon show coming up shortly. I'm not here next week, but Dan Burke will be stepping in to review the game with Newcastle, and we'll hear our interview with the former City chairman, David Bernstein, so join us then.
That was the Blue Moon podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can, and don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
But then again, I guess lots of clubs have mascots that are a bit odd. Like, what? Why is Gunnosaurus a dinosaur? What's the link between Arsenal and a T-Rex? But yeah, I don't mind Moonchester. You know, he's, I don't know, he seems to have a nice time with Moonbeam, and they're a good match, good for each other.
Are you on board with the furry-headed Moonchester? Because I'm very much a fan of the old, kind of smooth-faced Moonchester.
I didn't notice, but for old time's sake, I think, you know, growing up, my dad took me to my first City game, I think, when I was six. The one that I remember from then as a kid, that's who mascots are for, really. They're for kids. And, you know, I think there was nothing wrong with... I know he's gotten older, you know, people change. You know, he's got a bit more hair about him now.
Probably had a bit of work. City have got money now. He's had work done, hasn't he? That's what it is.
Yeah. But, you know, I'd be concerned if they'd kept the same Moonbeam costume for 20 years. But, yeah, I think I'm a traditionalist. So as traditional as a blue alien that has a blue alien girlfriend and supports Manchester City can be, I think the original one is probably my favourite.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast, and join us again next time for another episode.